Welcome once more, and honorable members, there are two bills which have been tabled already, military ombudsman bill and implementation of the Geneva Convention bill. They are already tabled. As soon as we finish with this one, we are going to work again on those two bills. Fortunately, the bill on ombudsman is a very short one, about 15 clauses, but the one on implementation of the Geneva Convention is a very thick book. I'm sure honorable members will get the copies, if you haven't as yet got those copies, so that you might start working on them. Thank you very much. We, honorable minister,
on a light note, Chair, I thought that we should compliment the department. Hardly a day goes by when there's not a new piece of legislation.
No, thank you very much. Give us a challenge. We have three sets of documents. The one speaks about the amendments that we made. Another one is the original bill. And the third one will be the drafted bill, the new one. Now, what you may find is that the numbering is slightly different because we have added some text and also subtracted some text. So we are going to be compelled to look at the original bill and the draft from time to time. Now, and then we are going to check it as to whether the amendments are vectored. And then if there are still new issues, some additions that you should have been done. Now, if we go to the new draft, that is in the first clause. Okay. It's on page 4. But in the original bill it's on page 3, isn't it? In the original bill it's page 3. There are amendments that have been suggested. I'm going to ask members to look at that page. That's where the page starts. And compare with the amendment that you are having. And then if there is anything that is missing, you must indicate to us. Over to you in page, the first page. That first page will be page 4 in the new bill. Yeah, the draft. Yeah. Page 4. Cover, yeah. cover. Oh, you start with the cover page.
What are the amendments, the deletions, insertions? Basically, to take into account the decisions that the committee had made about certain specific clauses. And then in certain areas, just for legal drafting purposes, to just make it look proper and read easier. If we could look at the very first page, the cover page, in the cover page, Minister Bertrand's bill, what is, has now been deleted is the bracketed proposed section 75, and then the addition is underlined number 3376 of 19. Now, just to guide, just we go through the bill, what is underlined are the new additions. From the original bill as tabled, and then what is bracketed is what is going to be removed. So on the very first page then, to delete that part as indicated, tabbed as that, and then if we could move to the second page, page 2, on page 2, on the arrangement of sections, the three which originally read authority of president, the change is now patron-in-chief, as the committee has also already decided, so delete authority of president to include insert patron-in-chief, and then with respect to number 8 in the arrangement of sections, section 8, director general functions in respect of the South African National Veterans Association, to delete what is bracketed as Director General Functions in respect of South Africa, and in its place to have National Military Veterans Association with a small M, small V, small A deleted. So it no longer has a name, but just generically referring to a National Military Veterans Association. And then on to the third page, Chairperson, Honorable Members, Section 22, which is with respect to composition and appointment of members of the Appeal Board, 23, so the Section 23 has now been deleted. Added as a section 23, qualification for membership of appeal board, as a new section.
Can you clarify that?
Stay the same.
Yeah.
Yes, 23 speaks to disqualification.
Yeah, I think
that's what I'm saying.
DG 23 and 22 say the same. I think this is because we had suggested that to swap the section initially. That's why maybe there is this tech changes here.
Okay.
All right.
But in the main body, 23 is there. Disqualification for membership. Okay, if we may move on to page 4 on the definition. on page 4 on the definition. Decisions that have been made are with respect to what we already saw in the arrangement of sections. Association means an umbrella National Military Veterans Association referred to in section 8. So to remove, as in the previous edition or the first edition of the bill, South African National Military Veterans Association. So it now reads, an umbrella association means an umbrella National Military Veterans Association. Small n, small m, small v, and small a. And then further on, as the committee also deliberated, dependent in the definition there to add legally or factually, as the committee had decided or resolved. And then in the further on down, on the military veteran definition, instead that which is highlighted there, which was the issue around provided the definition does not exclude any person referred to in paragraph A, B, or C who could not complete his or her military training due to an injury sustained during military training or a disease contracted or associated with military training. So that was the impression that the committee had made, and it is now included. Then on page 5, still on definition, the proposed definition that is with respect to 2, as highlighted, which reads as follows: notwithstanding the definition of military veterans, the minister may prescribe any force, unit, army, or corps, the members of which must be regarded as military veterans for the purposes of this act. Now, delete. And then if we proceed on page 5, there's no further amendments. On to page 6, no further amendments. On page 6, on page 7, as indicated in the arrangement of sections, patron in chief is a new insertion to then delete authority of president and then to continue then with the section remaining as is. And then still on page 7, with respect to section 5 on the benefits relating to military veterans, states as is, except to then delete in I, access to healthcare, and to delete the word and, because there's a further addition, and then after housing to insert and into that housing, and then to include a new subsection K, which is burial support. That's the impression. And then on page 8, there are no further amendments on 8. On page 9, no further amendments. On page 10, no further amendments. On page 11, no further amendments. And then on page 12. On page 12, there are fairly substantive amendments which relate to the, firstly, the changing of the arrangement of the section in terms of its name. So to expand Director General's function in respect of the South African National Military Veterans Association, to then have it shorter and to speak to the principles of a National Military Veterans Association, and to delete Director General's function in respect of South Africa. And then to delete then 8.1. In fact, 8.1, there is hereby established a National Military Veterans Association, which is to be an umbrella body representing all military veterans organizations or associations. And then in 2, to then make some deletions there, which are a direct reference to South African National Military Veterans Association, and then association with a small a, furthermore association with a small a, and then organization to delete and to insert structure representing Military Veterans Association, and then to delete also the mechanism contemplated in subsection 2, that is deleted, also 1. And then to delete associations in A at the bottom, and to insert organizations. So to read, representing military veterans organizations in FMM. And then further on, deletion of just the numbering or the alphabetical order, then changes because of the earlier deletion. So it's subsequent deletion. On page 13, the functions of association, association with a small a, not a capital A, and then the same on 91A. And then on page 14, minor amendment there, with respect to appointment of members of the advisory council. So,
can the DG go back to what are we saying about cost? What are we saying about cost nine?
Oh, through you, separately. On 9-1, it's just to remove the capital association from capital A to small A. Association on 9-1 before getting into A, B, C, and then going on to 9-2.
Okay. You can continue.
Page 14, on the appointment of members of the advisory council, it's just a stylistic amendment there. And then similarly, on page 16, to delete F, where it says member, to read member.
Page
16.
15, what about 15?
No, 15.
Yeah.
Oh, my apologies. 15 on the nomination procedure, or even before getting to that, 15 originally had read that appointment of members of the advisory council must be military veterans. The committee has decided no, that should be expunged, so that is all deleted and is bracketed accordingly. And then at B as well. So to just change A to remove multi-military veterans and B, all of that to then be removed. But to simply read, if one reads it from the very beginning, the minister must appoint not fewer than, and so on. It just goes straight into must have relevant knowledge, experience, or expertise. And then in the nomination procedure, for the advisory council members, 14.1, A, on where it previously read the director general must, to now expand or replace director general with minister. So the minister must, by notice, in at least 2 national newspapers. So it's now the minister. And then on 16, it was that 5. To remove the S, and then that's the only one on page 16. Then on 17.
This is one of the members.
The tracking error. Okay. On 17, then the There is no further amendment on 78, page 17. On page 18, also there is no further amendment to the section establishment of the appeal board powers and duties. No amendment. On page 19, also no amendment. And then on page 20, on the disqualification for membership of appeal board, consistent with the earlier amendment, to then also remove it's a military veteran. That's A, 23-1A. And then also then, what was B remains now becomes A. So the first section under 23-1 becomes A, is an unrehabilitated insolvent. And then B, what was C becomes now B. Now we're on page 21. Still under that same section on this qualification of membership. And then on page 21, there are no further amendments. On page 22, it is only two at the top, different persons or bodies or. So it will simply read, different regulations may be made regarding different categories of persons or bodies. If such differential treatment does not amount to unfair discrimination. So to remove different persons or bodies from at the top. And then to have a new insertion, which is three, to read any regulation relating to criteria that must be met in order to qualify for benefits contemplated in subsection 1A. Must be tabled by the Minister in Parliament at least 30 days before such regulation is published. That was the committee's session. And then, furthermore, on 22, there's no further amendment. And then on 23, that is a short title and commencement, which is the Military Veterans Act 2011, coming into operation on a date as determined by the President. Chair, that concludes the amendment, but I'd like the legal team from the State Law Advisor and the Department to just take on one or two other points.
You want to add? Okay. Just add, and then we'll go to honorable member, and then I'll come to you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, the Chair and the DG. The document that we have, DG, on page 13, 9-2, is indicated as also being deleted. I think there was a mistake, but the document that we sent to the committee secretary did not indicate the track changes on page 13, section 9-2, is a consequential amendment as a result of the changing of section 8. There's no longer reference to South African National Military Veterans Association. On page 13, that is 9-2, and the original deal, I think, is on page. And the original bill is on page 6, line 45 and 46. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We can now go to Honorable Members, Honorable Reman.
Thank you, Chair. On page 22, which I agree with, it says any regulation relating to criteria that must be met in order to qualify for benefits contemplated in subsection 1A must be tabled by the Minister in Parliament at least 30 days before such regulation is published, and I would add there for approval. It means, and that was the amendment that Parliament has to approve the criteria, the regulation on the criteria. If it reads here, it says it has to be tabled. Now, we can have a discussion on what does the word table mean. So you table it for notice to the speaker, and Parliament just take notice, it's incredible. But my take here, that is for such a republic for approval. That is what it is, because then it must come to the committee and be approved. So I would add there for approval. And I think it was Honourable Daniel that said that it should be approved.
You need to use your mic there.
I'm just saying it was supposed to be tabled. That's the thing. So that when it comes before that, we will be root through it. But it is not our prerogative to deal with regulations, the department's prerogative, but also for the fact that they are supposed to be tabled in Parliament. Approval, I'm not sure the legals will tell us.
Does, in terms of the law, does it make any difference to say approval or not? If it's tabled in Parliament, I take it that will be approval. What is the technicality?
Thank you, Chairman. I think when I spoke earlier, I forgot to mention that that amendment was a suggestion by the committee. In the department, when we deliberated, we did not agree that this should be in here, because I don't think that the regulations relating to implementation of this act will be of that much heavy important to the extent that we have to take that power from the minister, give it to the committee. I thought that the regulations are sub-legislations that Parliament gives the executive, gives the minister to regulate and implement the act.
Chair, we actually went through, I did indicate that that was the intention of the committee after there had been the debate exactly on this point, whether there was any need that the regulations are tabled. And we had even made the example that, for instance, in the Defense Force Regulation, all 20 chapters of them, none of them has ever said approval in Parliament from the time those were part of the Defense Act of 1957, amendments to the Defense Act in 1993 and 94, and then the subsequent overhaul of the Defense Act in its totality to the Defense Act 2002, as currently existing for the running and functioning of the National Defense Force. So we had said that in the context of this, and did concede that with respect to 25.1A, which is the criteria that must be met, and it is only that one for which regulation should be made, hence then that particular insertion that the committee has then agreed to, that any regulation relating to criteria and so on.
Thank you, Chair. The DG is correct because we said, and I personally said that there are two very essential aspects in this whole bill. That's the definition of a military veteran and then the criteria to qualify for the benefit. And I agree what the DG said, and we said not all the regulations, but because of the importance of this specific one with the criteria that it be approved. Well, we say Parliament, but it means actually by it goes through the committee as such. So that's why I want to say, we say it has to be tabled, but that is not enough. The technicality, as far as I'm concerned, many things are tabled in Parliament, but it is not necessarily approved by Parliament. Therefore, I would insert here for approval. Not all the regulations. Only the specific regulation on the criteria.
In view of what I think, even in the last time,
the legal and the DG did mention this, but because we were deliberating and we were trying to put things, I would suggest that as we go through the bill again on clause by clause, we will then have to, because I'm of the view that we really look at that. Because if the interpretation or it is an interpretation, who is a military veteran, if that is given into its totality, then I see no need that we should put that, the regulation, on this bill and in an extension.
Can I just say to my honorable colleague, this is not on the definition, that is not relevant here. It is on the criteria, it's actually the means test. That is what we're talking about here. So it's only the means test that is actually relevant in this specific law. Of course, it says, it refers to 1A, which is, what does 1A read? Yeah, the criteria that must be met to qualify for the, and it means actually the means test, because the means test must be determined.
Honorable Mayor,
thank you, Chair. I'd like to make a suggestion in respect of clause 25. And this is a matter which I haven't covered before in my amendments. You'll notice that in clause 25, the operative word is that the minister may make regulations. I would argue to the committee that there are really three important processes in the administration of this act. The one which I believe need to be regulated. The one is in the case of a military veteran, for example, who is not on the CPR. If we go back to the interim policy document, the interim policy document is very clear that there are categories, for example, of MK veterans who are de facto veterans, but for a range of reasons, their names were not included on the CPR. The minister, in my view, needs to prescribe a process, a verification process, by which those members' claims would be evaluated. They would either then be classed as military veterans and included on the CPR or not. So there needs to be a verification process, and that, I believe, must be in regulations. The second point will be in respect of dependents. The department will have to determine or make determinations on who are legitimate dependents of military veterans. And again, I believe that process should be prescribed by the minister. And then finally, we come down to the question of criteria to access benefits, which are covered in the regulations. My proposal would be that we divide clause 25 into two subsections. The first would be where the minister must make regulations in respect of a verification process for military veterans, a verification process for dependents, and the criteria for being or qualifying for benefits. So that would place an obligation on the minister to make regulations, and those regulations should be, in my view, be submitted to Parliament. The second section would then deal with the latter.
Chair, are we dwelling on the regulations now, or are we dealing with the legalities of the bill? Because it sounds to me who are prescribing what must be in the regulation. And I think already we have said that is not our domain. The regulations are the mandate of the department.
Honorable Menier, I was just going to ask the same question. I hear what you are saying. You're saying a very good thing about the minister writing the doing the verification and so on. Do we necessarily have, does Parliament necessarily have to approve that management activity? Do we have to? That is the question that must come to us. Yeah.
Chair, I'm simply stating that in these three cases, I think there should be an obligation on the minister to describe the verification process in regulations and for those regulations to be submitted to Parliament. We can debate whether they need to be approved by Parliament.
I'll come to you.
Chairperson, let us just get something clear about regulations. And the legal advisors can correct me if I'm wrong. Normally, regulations are not put forward to Parliament for approval. I say normally. Because a regulation cannot be in contrast with any section of any act. I mean, it's a regulation. But there is nothing wrong that Parliament has to approve regulations. And last time I've used the example specifically on the Firearms Control Act, where the regulations had to be submitted to the committee again for approval. So there's no legal aspect to say that regulations is the domain of the department as such and they deal with that. If we make a decision, yeah, that all the regulations or a specific regulation had to become back, it's not nothing illegal about it. And maybe the legal guys can correct me if I'm wrong. Thank you, Chief.
Honorable Daniel.
Chair, I just wanted to check when we say the minister must make an obligation, what are we saying? Are we saying that the minister does not know what he or she is supposed to be doing with this bill? And what this bill prescribes to the ministry. I just want to understand.
You come in, Honorable JJ.
Thank you, Comrade Chair. I'm not sure what the debate is all about, as Mr. Groenewald has already said. There's no way in which the regulation can go against the Act itself. It will never happen. So if the Act is fine, then the regulations will be within the Act itself. So I'm not sure what are we talking about, because as long as the regulations will be according to the Act, unless if it can be explained, or are we going to say, or maybe the minister didn't include something, we want to include it, or and that would be right in the regulations for the minister. As long as the regulations are not contrary to what the Act says, I don't see any problem. Unless if there will be any explanation that can satisfy me, why should this be a main issue anyway? Especially because we are going to be the first one to do that.
Honorable members, Honorable Manu.
Chair, I would urge members to try and distinguish between two factors. One is whether there ought to be regulations. Two is whether those regulations should be submitted to Parliament for approval. In the three cases I've mentioned, the military veteran verification process, the dependent verification process, and the criteria to access benefits. I think that we should oblige the minister to codify that in regulation. The verification process cannot be arbitrary. It needs to be set down in regulations. And I'm simply saying that in respect of the military veteran verification process, the dependent verification process, and the criteria to access benefits, that should be set down in regulations, and those regulations should be submitted to Parliament.
Honorable Madhya Chairperson,
I think we are not dealing with a new MP. We are dealing with an existing Act of 1998 that has regulations. 99, I'm sorry, that has regulations. And there is nothing that will stop again this amendment. For the existing regulations of the existing Act to be amended in accordance with instructions in this amendment. So I'm not sure whether it is this thing of not trusting the minister, or whether it is this thing that some of us are not very much clued up with our parliamentary work, and we think that we should instruct those we think they are not knowledgeable of their work, how to do their work. Chairperson, I apologize that I have to ask you that this debate is misplaced.
Honorable Khunabat.
Thank you, Chair. I'm
going to close on this.
Yeah, I don't usually differ from my colleague from the other side. This debate is very relevant, Chairperson, and I want to put it quite clear and also to answer the question. I will agree that we don't have to prove all the regulations. And the reason why I raise the matter on the criteria is, what is the means test? Let's come to practice now. Let's take social welfare, for instance. Pensions. The general means test says that anybody who's got an income of less than 60,000 rand a year, annually, with a certain age and everything, qualifies for social pension or government pension, or if it's old age pension, a person must be that at a specific age. Now, what do we say here? We now say to the minister, now the minister can determine. Maybe she can come, and let me just put one thing clear, Honorable Chairperson. It's not a matter of trusting a minister or not. I may trust this minister. I trust her. But I don't know who's going to follow up. Something can happen to the minister tomorrow, and then there's a new minister. In politics, you don't even trust your colleague. It's as simple as that. We have to write a bill that is not about trust and all that sort of things. It is, must be clear. But now the minister can come forth and say, okay, if you have an income of less than, say, 10,000 rand annually, is it fair? I don't think it's fair. Are we going to follow the criteria for social pensions, the means test? Then I say it's okay. And that is why I just felt that, in fact, we helped the minister to say when it comes to the criteria, the means test. Because what is the situation of military veterans? Do we have to see them exactly the same as the general means test? Or do we see them that they were part of a unique dispensation? Maybe. Maybe. We should say that's the way I feel personally. That although it is now, say, 60,000 annually, maybe we must say to recognize the special dispensation of military people that it should be 70,000, that we can raise it. And that is why I've asked that it comes back to the committee for approval. Because it is essential, the criteria, because that is going to determine which military veteran is going to qualify for benefits or not. And I say that because of the fact that the defense, maybe it's because of my background now, is a unique dispensation. I personally feel that military people should not be treated as ordinary civil servants. There's a difference. And that's why I felt, let it come back to the committee, only the criteria, not all the other regulations, only the criteria, that we can approve the criteria that has been established by the minister. That's what I want to say on the issue. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you very much. General, you wanted to say something?
Yeah,
I'll come to you.
Since I would like to agree with the Honorable Kuhneval that the military people or the military veterans are a unique set of people or a community. But however, like he has explained, we are all of us South Africans. We are not going to be reinventing the wheel. Certain criteria which are in existence, for an example, the issue which was raised by the Honorable Minister in terms of independence. There is an act governing that, and we cannot change it. In terms of the issue of what the Honorable Kuhneval has alluded to, yes, in terms of the costing of the bill, there was a submission to the effect that instead of the 80 or 85,000 with regards to housing, we then requested just a top up. But certain other things, the normal and the regulations which are governing those things, they will therefore be applicable. If then for a person to be allowed to access a housing, the current criteria being utilized by human settlement should be applicable. I cannot, for example, be saying I'll have a house, then therefore because I happen to be a military veteran, so currently what is governing the issue of the provisioning of the houses to South Africans, that it will be different for me. I don't think we should be looking at this thing different from existing regulations or acts.
Honorable.
Yeah, go on, Chairperson. I think it's very clear what whether the regulations are going to cover this part of the and my point here was that how I respond to that is that there is an existing act and there are existing regulations. In one of the portfolio committee meetings, when we were deliberating, if Honorable Mania would remember, I made mention of the forms that are subject to benefits of military veterans. And those forms derive from the fact that there are regulations. Now, there is no doubt at all that those regulations are going to be amended in accordance with the new amendment of the Act itself. Now, I agree with you, Honorable Kuhneval, that yes, the regulations will be presented to the committee. The committee will go through the regulations in realizing whether the regulations are in line with the Act. And if they are not in line with the Act, the committee will raise their own concerns around those regulations. Yes, that will happen. But the point that I don't think it's a point for us in the legislation as it stands now before us is that we cannot now decide to say we are going to prescribe how the regulation should look like. I don't think that is what we have the authority to do. However, we have a right as individual parties to make a formal submission to the minister and say who would wish to see this happening in the regulations if we so strongly feel deem so. And which, in my experience here, I've got very few years in Parliament, and those few years have not given me or provided me with enough experience to contest certain terrains within the legislative arena. But the little knowledge that I have is that the regulations are a responsibility of the department, guided by the minister, and thereafter the minister, because it is a matter of interest to us as military veterans also, will bring them here for us to see if they are satisfying in terms of how we wanted to see those regulations. But we can't prescribe to the minister. We can only raise our suggestions, and we can raise them individually, not as the committee, because the committee has got no authority over the regulation.
Honorable members, I think we have deliberated enough on this point, and I'm giving you the last chance.
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to ask, the General claimed that the verification process are contained in an act. Which act specifically?
That might have been a misunderstanding. I don't remember making that statement, Honorable Minister. I said we should look into this act in conjunction with the existing act. For an example, I said there is a criteria in terms of who must qualify for a house that is in human settlement. So, in other words, that criteria is still applicable to the military veterans. So I was only saying we should not look at this in isolation with some of the acts which are in existence. We are South Africans and we are dealing with South Africans. But I was not saying the verification is in the act. If I may have to clarify that. I was only merely saying, let's look at it in terms of existing. In other words, we are not going to be reinvent or come up with new acts precisely because we are too non military veterans.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let's just to remind us that it is common practice in the public sector when a government develops guidelines, regulations, policies, to consult within the sector concerned, both in government and with relevant organizations externally. And within that context, the department does not have free will to dictate what they want in regulations, policies, and guidelines, because the sector itself helps the department to develop appropriate guidelines in terms of what has to be, and regulations in terms of what has to be developed. I'm saying this to say perhaps that should give comfort to the portfolio committee that already there are checks and balances to ensure that we do right as a department in terms of developing regulations. Thank you.
No, sir, without belaboring the point, I was going to come on what Senator Mashwala had said earlier, that we will be using as a first stepping stone what already obtained, and take, for example, the point that Honorable Kunabar has made with respect to pension. We will certainly use that as the first point of a benchmark, but then but then consider exactly the point that he has made, that because these are people who've been in military service and special circumstances and hardships that they've undergone, there has to be consideration that it should be above the normal benchmark. Hence, with every one of the benefits, there is then that consideration put in, and that has been also been factored when we try to do the cost of the benefit. Exactly along the lines as the Honorable Kulabat has said.
Thank you, Congressman Chair. What I'm going to say is not different from the DG. Just to emphasize that I don't believe the problem that we have here is the term approval. Otherwise, everything is fine. And I don't believe the regulations can come here before us and we agree to something that we definitely, whether return from the ministry or so, it will never happen. That's my belief. It's our job to do that. It might be the minister's prerogative, but surely he can't come with something that is parallel to this. Because I agree fully with what you are saying. But maybe the method of doing it, but we are the watchdogs, and I should think it will be me and you against the minister if she puts something that is not appropriate in there. We'll work it out here. So I believe the only problem is putting in approval. It sounds very arrogant. Thank you.
Member, I'm closing. Should I? Oh, finished.
Chair, we appear to have agreed that there should be regulations in respect of the criteria, and those regulations must be submitted to Parliament. There's a disagreement about whether they should be for the approval or not. Let's park that for the moment. I support the Honourable Groenewald and believe that they should be for approval. But I'd again like to put on the table the additional processes which I believe should be regulated, and that is the process to determine whether an individual is in fact a military veteran, if his or her name is not on the CPR, and whether a person is in fact a dependent of a military veteran. Now, my understanding, again, I would ask the committee to consider obliging the minister to make regulations in respect of those two processes. They are absolutely fundamental in the administration of this bill. And if we are not satisfied that those criteria are tight enough, rigorous enough, there is going to be a major problem in the administration of this bill. I mean, as some background, perhaps the DG could assist us. I mean, my understanding from the interim task team's report, the process of including individuals who onto the CPR is already taking place. So there must be a verification process currently being implemented in the department. And that verification process cannot be arbitrary. It must be set down in terms of guidelines or rules or indeed regulations.
That is the point of clarity. I just want to clarify the question.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. But what are you actually saying? Are you saying in this bill it must be written down that there must be regulations specifically for this and that? Is that what you are saying?
Chair, I'm proposing that in that clause 25 be divided into two sections. The first section, the minister must make regulations in respect of a verification process to determine whether a person is a military veteran, a verification process to determine whether an individual is a dependent, and the criteria to access benefits. Those regulations must be submitted to Parliament. That would be Clause 25, Subsection 1. Clause 25, Subsection 2. The Minister may make regulations, and then we can deal with all the matters set out in B through E.
That's all.
Yeah. Chatterton, do we prescribe on the regulations, or do we wait for the regulations to certify whether those regulations are in the satisfactory of our expectations?
Honorable Chairman.
Chair, also I would like to know if in the Minister of Veterans Act 1999, is there anything to the effect that the Honourable Member is talking to? Because the regulations are there, but the Act does not prescribe that. The fact of the matter is that the regulations will be there. Why do we have to do that now? Thank you, Chair.
You want to respond? Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Okay, Chair, I said what I wanted to say. I was actually fighting for a special dispensation, a unique dispensation. At least the DG supports me. But what I want, just for clearance now, on page 22, do we keep the sub-clause 3 as it is? It reads at the moment, any regulation relating to so-and-so must be settled by Minister in Parliament at least. Are we still going to keep that as it is there? Is there clarity on that? I will be satisfied, Chairperson, if you say we leave it as it is. Yeah, I made this an amendment proposal. I will withdraw that. And if we say that as it stands there, because that is actually what we said in the previous meeting. Or we leave it as it is, then we can continue.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. That's the solution. I think we should leave it as it is. We don't need to talk more about it now.
No, Chairperson, we don't have a problem with it as we. How it is amended on the, I don't know what draft do we call this one, the B or the A, because I was trying to check how it is amended.
It's a revised draft.
Yeah. I think we are heading to this
Now, what should happen?
On
this, yeah. That one is closed, and I'm happy about it.
I'm not.
Oh no, it will come to you.
Oh no, I'm on something else.
Something else. Okay. Let's get your objection there, Honourable Minister.
Yeah, I've
made a proposal that the minister make regulations on two verification processes. I've not heard any argument or convincing or compelling argument why that should not be the case. All members of the committee agree that these are two vital processes and they cannot be arbitrary. Therefore, the criteria and the process should be set out in regulations, in my view.
Honourable
Michael.
My understanding is that two critical areas that Honourable Mani is talking about is the Minister and the verification. I thought that it's the definition of a military veteran. I mean, if you verify, you are using the definition. And what else is it? And the dependent. These two are the ones you are worried about. And as you say, those are the core of of the whole bill. And I can imagine there being no regulations that clarify that. For instance, if we go to page 4, the explanation of, or the definition of, the definition here says, military veteran means as any South African citizen who rendered military service to any of the military organizations. That is very broad. And as it is broad, it means you will need regulations to clarify this. There's no way in which you are going to leave it this side. There will be somebody in uniform who gives the general tea every day. Would that one qualify? The regulations must explain something of this nature. There's no way in which it can be, there's no way in which this can be explained in regulations the way it is here. If we get to dependent, that will be on page 7. I agree with you, I've got a problem here even myself. That's why I was raising my hand. The addition of burial support. It says, number 5, the benefits relating to a military veteran and his or her dependents are, and there's an insertion K, that says burial support. I don't agree with that. It must be, it can't be for the dependent. Can't bury every dependent of a military veteran. I would say that must be a benefit for the military veteran, the principal beneficiary. And sometimes I agree with you, Mane, that if it makes sense, then I would prefer that these be separated, as you were saying, to clearly say it's a benefit to a military veteran. If I've got 12 wives and 60 dependents, we are not going to bury every one of them. It's not possible. So I agree with your... Then it means some of this, a dependent has got to be explained. There's no way in which it can be explained. Maybe as somebody said earlier on, you are not a trusting person. You don't trust, but those two will have to be explained. Otherwise, the bill will be useless without them. Thank you.
Well, honorable members, we are now on another level. We are debating the approval of the regulation, and that has been done with. We are not going to do that. Now, we, honorable Menier, came with a suggestion as to what should be included. I think we are debating that. What Honorable Makei here is doing is trying to explain, or whatever you are suggesting is covered already. Honorable Menia.
Honorable Marquet, with respect, is wrong, because his departure point is incorrect. There is a difference between the definition and a process of verification. Let's take an example. I claim to be a member of MK, and clearly members of MK, in terms of the definition, are entitled to benefits. I go to the DG, and he points out to me that although I claim to be a member of MK, my name is not on the CPR.
Honorable Menier saying he has been a member of MK. I thought... I thought you were going to welcome him because you are a commander of MK.
No, I just want to know, because after this meeting, I think we must have a discussion. So I want him to confirm.
Honorable Madier.
It sounds like the Honorable Madier is on a recruiting drive.
Okay.
The DG is now, at this point, in a position where he needs to evaluate my claim. and he can only evaluate that claim on the basis of a verification process which cannot be arbitrary, needs to be set down and prescribed, and I believe that that process should be set down and prescribed in regulations. All I'm saying is that we, in clause 25, should oblige the minister to set up that verification process in regulations, and that those regulations be submitted to Parliament. We have a duty to satisfy ourselves that that process, which the Director General would be obliged to follow, is sufficiently rigorous. That's all. Where exactly the same applies for dependents. I mean, the DG, I mean, there will be claims from individuals that they are dependents of military veterans. The DG will then be obliged to evaluate those claims. In the case of a legal dependent, the DG, for example, may require a marriage certificate, and the process of evaluation and verification might be simple. But in cases where there's there might be much more complex cases, and again, that process, I believe, cannot be arbitrary. It needs to be set out in regulations, and we have an obligation to ensure that those processes are sufficiently rigorous. That's all.
Honorable Madhya?
Yes, can we check with the department? Because this process that Honorable Madhya is obsessed with, it's a process that is in place as we speak. So can we check with the department what tools are they using now in their verification process of confirming the legitimacy of claims made by individuals, members of individuals' armies?
You must also remember what the general said, that you should not see it in isolation because it involves other departments and other stakeholders.
I did get that point, but all that I want, just for pleasing Honorable Mania, because I think in the beginning of the deliberations of the peace, we were continuously speaking about the means test in order for people to qualifications. So all I'm saying, Honorable Chairperson, is Can we allow the department just to give us an insight of what is happening now? Because I know that people are going in there, people are going through certain levels of qualifying for this benefit, and it is taking place as we speak now. We are not talking about something that is in isolation, but we are speaking about something that is happening as we speak. As we are seated here, I think there is a person who is undergoing a process of verification as we speak now. Can we just allow or ask the department to just give us a glimpse of what is happening? Possibly it will satisfy the anxiety.
Honorable Daniels, you still want to say something before we go to the department?
Chair,
you will come, Honorable Kruneberg.
Chair, we are not in agreement. Dictating, because this is dictating. The department has been doing this for time immemorial. It has been taking care of military veterans in whatever scale that it has been. But the fact of the matter is that it was able to identify military veterans. What is new now that has changed so much that the department will not be knowing its dependents? Even before the promulgation of the Department of Defense and military veterans. Military veterans have been taken care of in the Defense Department. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I think I just want to say to my honorable colleague, I'm a member of parliament, I'm a legislator. I have the authority to dictate. Nobody else dictates to legislators. We dictate. And if we decide that that should be, then it is so. Whether the civil servants like it or not, it's their problem. But we can dictate. But that's not the point. What I want to say, Chairperson, is that I heard what the Honourable Mayor said. I feel accommodated with his argument by Section 25, subclause B, where it says the Minister may, subject to the provision of her, make regulations relating to any matter required or permitted to be prescribed by or in terms of this Act. So there must be some regulations who gives a definition of what must prescribe. That was where my argument was, whether approval or not. But I said I'm satisfied if we accept that subclause on table in Parliament. So what I want to say is that we keep it as it is. It will have to come forward and it will be have to table in Parliament. In that sense, I feel accommodated. And maybe we continue, and in practice, this is a new bill. Yes, I know it relates to the 99 bill, but surely there are going to be some amendments in future as well. When this bill becomes an act, there will be amendments. And maybe then we should look at that matter when we proceed. It's a bit of it's not a new field, but let's go forward with it. Thanks.
Can we then take the suggested route? Honorable Diane.
Honorable Chairperson, I would say let's take it.
Yeah.
I think what the veteran outside is saying is correct. We are the lawmakers. Right? We are here to make law, to dictate what is necessary. We don't dictate by anybody. We are ourselves. We have come here to make law, to dictate what it has to be. So I got to agree. Thank you. Let's accept it.
Are we accepting, Honorable Minier?
Chair, the Honorable Minier asked if the Director General would give us an insight into the current processes. I think that would be very helpful, but we are not in agreement.
Okay.
Using the example that the Honorable Mayor has made, there is an existing process that is in place that we execute on this side on a daily basis in cases like that. Because in other cases that are not like that, then it would be that a member already is on the system in some way or other. So there is a verification process that we undertake, including even calling up the person who did such a claim and having a board, a verification board, that sits and actually grills and interviews that person. So that is in place. We have been doing it, and after we've satisfied ourselves, including about the veracity of the year of enlistment, because sometimes you may make the claim, and you may be a bona fide, but your year of enlistment may not be what you claim it to be. So we go even beyond that verification of a bona fide status as a minister of defense, but into also your year of enlistment and so on. Commander, who was in command, where was training, where did training take place, the whole set of things. Verifying independently with the member association and so on. So that's in place. In fact, General Mashwala can even add to that.
General Mashwala?
The days back from 1994, during the integration process, where you even make sure that the whole process is transparent, in that the committee itself or the panel is representative of all former voters. Since 1994, so that model has been utilized. So as we deliberate, we must not forget that some of the other things, it's not a new department, whose regulations governing those things, they have been there. And for that reason, at some point, we presented to say to the Honorable Members of Parliament that we have got verified, confirmed 57 military veterans in our database. We're basing ourselves on those photos. It was not just the process, you know, being arbitrary. It was a well-thought-out process to ensure that at the end, even the individual who appear before those verification, you know, panels, is satisfied. So it's in place and it's effective.
Thank you, Comrade Chair. I would suggest, considering the problem is for Section 25 to be changed into two parts, I would suggest that as this committee, we send an annexure to the department that, as he says, or no, we would like these things to be in the regulation without having to put them into the act itself. And I think that also carries weight. And we say, that is my suggestion. And we say in your regulations, we request that you cover 1, 2, 3 without having to put them in here. And I don't think they can say no, as you were saying, that our word is law. That's my suggestion. If Honorable Mania will be happy with that.
Honorable Mania, are you in agreement now?
Chair, just 2 points. The first is just again a question to the DG. He's clearly described a process which currently used by the department. My question is that process codified in regulations to the existing act, or is it codified in guidelines or manual or anything of that nature? Because if it is not, it is then a process which, where there is a risk that it could become arbitrary, and that is the danger. On the question of an annexure, I'll take that on review, but I don't want to commit now. Okay.
That process was qualified in the integration process, in the integration context, which we then took on or carried on into the current process now that they established a military veteran department. So what we may need to do is to simply look at those amendments. But it was done in terms of the integration, as he spelled out all of those bonds and so on. It informed that are in place to check all of those.
Thank you very much. It seems you are not sure that you don't realize that we are in agreement already.
Yeah, we're definitely in agreement. I'm on something totally different, on page 7.
Can I just, for clarity, Chairperson, do I understand it correctly now that if I've got a sworn affidavit from the Honorable Mazia that I've been a member of MK, I will qualify?
No, that's not enough.
No, that's not enough.
You must put my hand so that you come and join the mission.
Honorable Member, I think we are done with this.
Am I still on the floor?
No, you'll be on the floor. And I'm going to give you a chance and I'll give you Honorable Daniel a chance.
Thank you. I'm on a totally different one. The one that I gave as an example to Honorable Mani, or I don't seem to agree with page 751K, the insertion. I don't, page 7 of the, I wouldn't like to say new revised, yeah, that's the right term. I don't agree with it because it says the benefit relating to a military veteran and his or her dependent are burial support. No. I would prefer that out of the benefits that are here, let's take those that are specifically for the military veteran, the principal beneficiary, and separate them from the debate, meaning that we have two sections here. Because I definitely don't agree with, if my mother-in-law is my dependent, why must she be buried by a military veteran? Even if I would, sorry. No, I wasn't suggesting that. Maybe I don't like her face, but I'm just forced. Yeah. So I was just saying that let these two be very, very clear. I personally don't agree with that. My only thing would be that we separate the two, principal beneficiary, one side. For instance, honoring, that is 51C, honoring and memorializing fallen military veterans, that does not have anything to do with the dependent. So why don't we group those that are for the military veteran, him or herself, and then those of the dependent aside. Thank you.
Honorable Daniel.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I'm going to make a suggestion to say, if we are done dealing with those amendments that came with this new revised, I would suggest that we start again now at the beginning so that we go that way. So that if there are any other that we might have not talked to in the past PC meeting, we begin to do that now. Because if we are all over, we are not going to be able to follow everything in
sequence.
Thank you.
Honorable
Madam. Yeah, no, Chairperson, I just want clarity to know because my understanding was all those that are underlined, they are underlined for a reason. And the area that Honorable Madam is referring to is also underlined. Yeah. So maybe that.
Technicality here, which I think need to be taken into consideration. And but it also comes with a suggestion that we need to group these benefits. Some of them may not be across the board. An example is this one of the memorializing and military veterans. Yeah, I think that is the issue, that is the technicalities that we need to deal with. Honorable Madhya.
Yeah. Now, Chairperson, again, takes us back to the management of the Act. And the Act is managed by regulations. Are the regulations not going to be specific in terms of some of these things, like, for instance, honoring and memorializing fallen military veterans. Is it not going to be reduced when you come with the management mechanism? Because the regulations are a mechanism for managing the Act. So the Act is it's only what exposes you to what the expectations are. But the regulations will then refine the specifics. I don't know if I'm correct.
Obviously, the regulation won't memorialize Marcus' daughter or son for Marcus' activities in MK. I think that is very obvious. Maybe we must look into that. Let me, General, then come to you, Honorable Menia and Honorable Kukunemar.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Member. I just don't think the coping which the Honorable is referring to is going to cause any harm, because it's not changing anything. And if we recall, in terms of the cost, we're in terms of our presentation, we're very specific in terms of which of those benefits are going to be for dependents, and which of those are going to be for the principal members. I can say in your head that you were very clear to say education, training, and skills is for both the principal member as well as the dependent. And similarly also in terms of the pension. So if we just group them so that whoever might have this, shouldn't be saying in the B or in the F, it is stated ambiguously that I would benefit in terms of compensation, etc. It is of course confusion. I think just that grouping is not changing anything, but it's clarifying things. But yes, of course, there will be regulations in terms of regulating these other benefits. So I think it's just one, because it doesn't change anything.
Thank you, General. Let's go here, Honorable Mania. We'll come back to you.
Thank you, Chair. I would support the Honorable Marquet in his proposal, and I do think that we should, the legislature should apply its mind to what kind of benefits we expect to go to military veterans as opposed to their dependents. I see no reason why there should be an obligation on the department, for example, to facilitate the employment of dependents of military veterans, for example. Equally, the general, I think, is incorrect because the draft bill says these benefits are benefits relating to a military veteran and his or her dependent. If the legislation said these are benefits relating to a military veteran or his or her dependent, perhaps the situation would be different. So I support the Honorable Markey. I do believe this committee must spend some time deliberating on this matter.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to be short, but I want to confirm that. And maybe if we look at it, we will see that it was an insertion. The original bill didn't have that in. So maybe we should go back to the original book. That's all I want to ask.
You see, that was my problem. We seem to be friends with the Honorable Mania. I mean, he said exactly what I wanted to say. If it's written the benefit relating to a military veteran and his or her dependent, that's a problem. Unless But I would agree with the general that if he doesn't give us a problem, why not do it? It becomes very easy.
I think we are in agreement that we should follow that route. Then to close the gaps and so that the legislation should not have a lot of ambiguities. I think the department must work on that. I think we are going to have the final submission by next week. Honorable Mayor.
Chair, I wanted to make an additional proposal. I don't know if this is the appropriate time to do so.
Do that.
This would be an additional proposal and a proposal that was not covered in my initial submission. But if I'm not mistaken, and the DG could perhaps just assist me, I think it's a major problem that there is no obligation on the department, the association, the advisory council, and the appeal board to table an annual report in Parliament. I believe all those institutions should be obliged to table an annual report in Parliament. I may be incorrect in respect of the department, but certainly in respect of the association, the advisory council, and the appeal board, I think that each of those institutions should table an annual report in Parliament.
Oh,
suggestion.
What Honorable Mania is saying is that all those institutions which are provided for in the Act must also table their annual report in Parliament. And there must be an obligation for them to do that. I don't think we should have problems with that.
Chair, would the annual report of the department not suffice? Because within the annual report of the department, there would be a report to yourself about how the money's budget that was allocated has been utilized, which some of which will actually go to ensure the running and operations of all of these entities, whether advisory council, the association, and so on, and would then be reflected in the report, the annual report of the department. Also, working backward in the strategic plan of the department. So I'm not sure whether you want to then separate it. Of course, noting that the advisory council is the minister's advisory council, but the department has the obligation for the services and ensuring that it does what is within the mandate that it should do, as stipulated in the Act.
Hello, you answered.
Chair, that may be a remedy. I'll take it on review. But, I mean, the DG would accept then, for example, the appeal board may be dealing with, the appeal board, or indeed particularly the appeal board, may be dealing with some very difficult issues, which are then not reflected in the department's annual report. I mean, he would have to concede that would be a possible logical consequence. I would feel much better if the appeal board did a separate report, because they would then be able to raise issues or focus on issues which the department may otherwise not have done.
Chair, not necessarily. The report of the appeal board would also form part of the report that we will make. And I'm trying to remember now, or just have a quick scan of which entities over and above what you have as oversight over the department under you, Department of Defense, Department of Military Veterans, which entities then
get extracted out of the department that they end up reporting to. A case in point is the council. The council, it is so because it is an act, it is a statute which is under the Council Control Act, and it then has a statutory board, and so on you go. So in that context, in the act on the council, there is that obligation for it to then report. So it, even if it reports, may appear in a very small part of the Department of Defense, but separately it has to give its report. So in the case of these ones, they are legislated as an integral part of this bill and not separately from the bill.
Okay. Thank you very much, DG. Honorable Maget.
I'm on something else. That one is close. Page 14 of the revised bill. 13.1A. I think there's an omission here. The minister must appoint no fewer than persons who serve on the. How many? Page 14. No fewer than 10. And still on that, can I just find out where, just for interest sake, what informed the 10, not 30, not 20. And what informs the B, at least 3 out of 10. That's for interesting. That is the advisory council. See, because I might suggest to you, you know, why not 17 or why not 15? Thank you.
Honorable Kuneva.
Thank you, Chip. Maybe Mr. Maki should go and look at the original law. The original law has got in not fewer than 10. So it's from the beginning it was 10. And there may be different arguments about that, Chip. But if you look at other commissions, normally they round about, say, 10 people. Maybe the department can elaborate on that because that is the way we received it from the department. But if you look at other commissions, for instance, you will also see it's about 10 members. Let's take, for instance, the service commission. It's also 10 members. So maybe Mr. Markham should just go back to the original board.
The standard practice. Do you have anything to say on that one?
Originally, we had taken standard practice, but also considered the number of military veterans organizations that are in existence. There may well be a case, actually, for reconsideration of the 10 to increase it. I don't know, 15 or 15 or whatever, but the committee would then decide. Yes, taking into account the extremely diverse nature of the constituents that would have to deal with. But not only that, the functions that have been pointed out in the bill, which the council would then need to do. So we would not have any difficulty with reconsidering the number, because it's not, the association now has 3, and then there has to be a department that's already, what, 4 or so, and that is the level.
Honorable Maki.
Yeah, very fast, before the DG can change his mind, I suggest 15 instead of 10 because of exactly what he said. The other time when we had just as an example, the other time when we had public hearings, I think we had two aflas there. We didn't know which one was which. And then we had, if it's only three, okay, because we had two. So you can see by that, or if we say three, it's not even said whether it's proportional or what. If it's proportional, we'll only have MK here. So if we add to 15, maybe some of these people might be lucky to have one or so. Some of these associations. So I would suggest that we have 15. Then we can have maybe seven persons nominated, being military veterans. Because if we start saying persons nominated by the association, it's going to give us problems. Am I being clear or am I thinking around? I would suggest 15 and say seven, at least seven, must be military veterans. Meaning that what I'm suggesting must change, is that we must also take out persons nominated by the association. Because somewhere in this bill it is said that people don't need to be, military veterans don't need to be members of the association. So we can't say nominated by the association. We would rather say must be military veterans. Those are my suggestions.
Honorable Mackenzie,
Chairperson, can we request that you suggest a process we should follow? Because you see, we are not consistent in how we are dealing with the bill now. Can you arrange a consistent method where you go with us either page by page or clause by clause if we have any amendments? Suggest those amendments and push on, because now we are going to move from last page, first page to middle page, and so forth, and that is going to confuse us.
Yes. Honorable Kunabat,
can I add to that, Jefferson? I fully support that, because with great respect towards the Honorable Marty, I mean, we had previous meetings, he was not there. I mean, we cannot come with a meeting and we deliberate it and all that sort of things and then we start again. Please, I want also clarity on the process.
Thank you very much. The question of the two APLAS, Honorable Market, it was not reported to this committee. We only had one APLAS reporting. Ordinarily, you want to say something?
Yes, you passed me over, Chair. I support the Honourable Mazir's call that we agree on the process and that we add some rigour to our deliberations. But on the point that the Honourable Marke was making, I think we need to be careful to distinguish between military veterans and their representation, which seems to me to be taken care of by the umbrella provision of the umbrella body, and the advisory council, where you would presumably want some military veterans, but you would want that advisory council presumably to be to comprise of experts in the field to provide the minister with good advice. Military veterans would be represented in the umbrella body. The advisory council, I believe, is a different kind of institution. constitution, and we need to legislate so that it has the relevant expertise to provide good advice to the minister.
Maybe the suggestion that you're giving now is not coming for the first time, that we need to go back to the bill now clause by clause and see as to where we need to put in flesh or take out flesh. But I thought that we have done that when we were looking at this the document where amendments were made, but it doesn't. Not a transmesh. We can go on with it, and we start from one again, right? The cover page. Honorable Daniel.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I just wanted to check on the cover page. Since we have 11 official languages. I think we could have in the act now, not in the bill, in the act, that it's possible that we can have two other languages, which would be a part of the Nguni, is Zulu, and the Sotho one.
Any other thing on one, on the cover page? Nothing. Page 2 of the revised bill.
Page 2?
Yeah.
Oh, thank you, Chair. Where we are giving the principle where it says end second function. I'm of the opinion that we lose second.
Where are you reading?
To provide for principles recognized by the state as governing the affairs of Mithar veterans, blah, 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 blah. President to be the chief, patron in chief, blah, 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 blah. To establish an advisory council, Mithar veterans and Mithar veterans appeal board, and functions of the department. Of military veterans and to provide for matters incidental thereto. I'm suggesting that we lose the certain. We lose.
Take out certain. Suggestion to take out certain. We are on page 2 on the preamble there.
Why do we want to check out certain functions? Because it's exactly what it is.
If I may check. What are the responsibilities of this department, what are the responsibilities of this department in terms of military veterans? Are there some other things that they are not supposed to be part of in terms of that constituency?
Are we in agreement about the word certain function?
Chairperson, no. We're not in agreement.
Mm-hmm.
My suggestion is stays as it is, because this bill doesn't describe all the functions of the department. It only describes certain functions. Or else then we have to go and write the bill to see to all the functions of the department. I cannot see. It is correct as it is to say certain functions of the department.
I see the on page 9, it's repeated certain powers and duties of department. So that there is consistency in that.
If I may, Chair, can we indulge the legal? Maybe I'm
wrong. Or,
The chairperson, yes, the certain was in fact deliberately put there because the Act does not contain all the functions. There's also the Public Service Act under which the department operates. There may also be functions in that Act.
Thank you very much. Then can we go to where we leave certain? Can we go to page 3?
Chairperson, sorry, I just want to clarify. Is it page 3 of the revised one?
The revised one.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. The one that the DG was leading us off.
Okay.
Yeah. Agreed. Oh, page 3. Honorable Make, Honorable Turner.
On page 3, to insert 23 for disqualification for membership of a appeal board. Just to insert the number 23.
Insert the number 23?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Well, okay. Okay, let's go here. Right. We are going to agree. We are going to 4.
Agree.
Agree. 5. Agreed. 6. Agreed. 7. Agreed. 7. 7, Honorable Minister.
Page?
The page 7. That's the page where there was a suggestion that we must separate the benefits. I think we agreed on that one. Now the department must work on that. Right, Honorable Mania?
Chair, yes, I was just merely going to record what I think is an agreement of the committee that the department will separate out benefits to which military veterans are entitled and benefits to which dependents are entitled, and of course to record.
Mazia, you have problems there. Ask me an help. I say you have another meeting there.
No,
let's discuss all of us here.
No, we are discussing, but we
are in the corner. Yeah, he was telling me that. We can't cook us there in the corner. Hmm? Okay. No, but it should not disturb the meeting. That's what I'm saying. We are on 7. Yeah. Yeah, you can.
Thanks. My first point was that we have agreed as a committee to separate out benefits to which military veterans would be entitled to and benefits to which dependents would be entitled to, but I would like to record my objection to the current 5F in respect of business opportunities, which I do not believe military veterans or dependents should be receiving or should be involved or the department should be involved in facilitation or advice on business opportunities.
You raise your objection on that one, Honorable Daniel?
I remember saying, Chair, that there's nothing wrong with facilitation. facilitation is open, it's broad, I will fill up the opinion that they said. Thank you.
Chairperson, just on a point of order. As far as the process is concerned, we're going clause by clause.
Yeah.
If a member has got an objection, the objection be noted.
Yeah, okay.
We're not going to have a discussion on the matter again.
No, thank you.
This is what we should do, that we record the objection and we go on.
Sorry, Chairperson, do I have clarity now that the suggestions on the benefits has been accepted now? And or, and distinguished. That's accepted. Okay, right, thank you. Right, thank you.
Sorry, Chairperson, can I go to page 7?
Okay.
Chairperson, I just want us to check on benefits relating to military veterans, clause 5.1a, compensation to military veterans who suffer disabling injuries or psychological trauma. I'm proposing the removal of psychological trauma and because it is. Explained that we suffer from a terminal disease. So we remove the psychological part.
Why do you want to remove the psychological part, Honorable Madame?
Because it is covered as a point B, as
point
traumatic
B.
Stress disorder.
Honorable Madame?
I'm not an expert, that I would suggest that military veterans may suffer from psychological trauma other than post-traumatic stress.
Honorable Michael?
Yeah, I think I would agree with my comrade here. Psychologically, it's very broad. It might mean anything. But if it's trauma, we leave it as trauma. It might be broad, but it doesn't have some insinuations. In my culture, if you have psychological problems, it means you are mad to some extent. So if it's trauma, it covers almost everything. So I will support it. Now we take out psychological. We would rather say post-traumatic, whatever the real medical term, like post-traumatic disorder or something. Psychological is too broad for my liking. Thank you.
We don't have a psychologist in the committee. Honorable Kukunaba.
Jefferson, I have a problem with the process because now we're deliberating again. I mean, it's the first time now we come to the clause, now we deliberated it again. Why wasn't it the objection made before? That's on the one hand. And with great respect, I would suggest that it stays as it is because it says resulting from their participation in military activities. So it's not just a broad definition of psychological trauma or anything like that. It must have been resulted from the participation in military activities. So my suggestion is to leave it as it is. There was not a previous proposal for an amendment on this clause, so I will go along as it is at this moment. Thank you.
The suggestion? Honorable Daniel?
No, Chair. I just want to check. We are deliberating, and the first time we were deliberating on things that were in our safety. Now we are looking into other things. We've been reading the bill. Is it therefore wrong to go back and say, you think this is not, this is the process? Let's go back to the process. Because if it was not mentioned in the first time of the deliberation, is it not right now that we can do that again? What are we saying?
That should not be the argument now. You agreed that we will go clause by clause. My understanding is that if there is anything that you missed out in the previous meeting, you'll record that. Whether you object on something, as Honorable Meni has objected on something, or whether you need something to do to be retooled, I think that is the process that we are following now. Now, on the side, there was a suggestion that the psychological problem that we are talking about is as a result of military activities. Therefore, the argument is that the psychological trauma should stay on those grounds. Honorable Dennis?
Then I want to check, what other traumas are there? Are we going to mention all of them? Because trauma is trauma, and then it's differentiated in terms of the type of trauma there. I'm just checking. Thank you.
Do we have an expert on the journey? Maybe we should leave it, because it is said that the psychological problem that must have resulted because of military activities or participation.
Thank you, Comrade Chair. If we check D, what would be the difference? Post-traumatic stress disorder. Doesn't psychological trauma fall under some of this? Under post-traumatic stress disorder. If it falls under that, why then single out psychological? Why don't we simply say post-traumatic stress disorder, which has got all of the things that, all the traumas that might exist. Why single out this one, which I don't agree with, because translated into my language, it means something else. Thank you.
Honorable Madhya?
Yeah, no, Chantan. I seem to agree with Honorable Mark that once it becomes psychological, it means it's a mentally disorder. Once it becomes psychological, because if it is psychological, it means you are no longer functioning as you are supposed to, normal like any other person. Such trauma, I don't recall it being prescribed anywhere. Once it is prescribed, you are referred to a mental hospital, or you are referred to an observation system where it will be clarified whether it is mental disorder or what is the problem. So I want to ask you, Chairperson, maybe to look at the highest legal knowledge to assist us in the term itself.
Well, we need a psychologist. It's a psychological problem, necessarily a psychiatric problem, because we've become very academic now. Honorable Minister?
Chair, do you think that we need to be a little bit careful here? Because 5A and 5B are different in one very important respect, and that is, in 5A, you could receive compensation. In 5B, you receive counseling. So the causes are different. It would seem to me, and without being a medical expert, that although you could receive compensation for psychological trauma as a result of your participation in military activities, given the current framing of the bill, you might not be able to receive dedicated counseling for that psychological trauma. So there could be a difficulty here, and we might need to look at this. If your psychological trauma, which you suffered as a result of your participation in military activities, is so severe that you ought to receive compensation, why should you not receive counseling?
Hello? Honorable Daniel?
Thank you, Chair. If I recall correctly, Chair, in the public hearing, the doctors also were not happy with that. If my memory says anyway, the way it is captured, it was not correct. But we'll have to refer to that.
Honorable Mabeza.
Thank you, Chairperson. We can also restructure it by saying compensation to military veterans who suffer disabling injuries or trauma who suffer from a terminal disease resulting from them include now this traumatic stress disorder so that it can also stick to A and B. If we can also include this post-traumatic stress disorder in that sentence, then it means that this military veterans can be compensated and be dedicated, get a dedicated counseling and treatment.
What you're suggesting is that we put the two clauses together to be one.
We can also do that as long as it's going as long as...
Because you raise an important... Honorable Mignolo, is an important point here, because the other one has got only compensation, the other one has got counseling. Yeah, can we make that clause one clause? The compensation and dedication to counseling. Those are the key words.
I think that we've drawn the department's attention to a possible problem here. I wonder if this isn't something that the department might want to apply their minds to, and as they when they propose a amended version of Clause 5, they might deal with or make a proposal to deal with this possible problem. We are in a bit of a difficult position, Chair, because we're debating two concepts. Post-traumatic stress, which I think is a diagnosis of a particular psychological disorder, perhaps, or illness, and then psychological trauma, and I'm a little bit concerned that we don't have the expertise necessary to distinguish between these two terms.
Can we take that route, or department? Let's get the department. Oh, before...
Can I add to that, Chairperson, that maybe for our next meeting, because this is going to be a clause that we still have to make a decision on, is it possible that we can get an expert here? I myself would like, I'm not an expert. I have my own opinion on the matter. I think psychological trauma is a wider definition, which actually includes traumatic stress disorder or whatever. Maybe if we can get a doctor or expert on the issue that can explain to the committee, because we must take it's important what the decision we are taking. And I will feel satisfied if I can have an expert advice on that.
Thank you very much. Let's hear the department.
I would be happy to keep them separate to compensation. That's one aspect, and then to then continue with what is there, and then perhaps amending then the psychological to remove that to include in the post-traumatic stress disorder trauma, and then on the B to leave it as is because it's dedicated counseling. It's a separate issue. But on the matter of getting the expert, if the committee so agrees, that can be done. However, be cognizant that there are as many experts as you have lawyers, if you understand what I mean.
Definitely.
because there are not many health professionals who are specializing in this particular area. There are very few, and within that, there are different opinions about the very issue we're talking about, of recognition of post-traumatic stress disorder, and also insofar as it applies to military. Even in the U.S., that problem only got acknowledged only in the early 80s, in 1983, when post-traumatic stress disorder, the so-called Vietnam syndrome, was in there 10, 15 years earlier. So what I'm saying is, it's fine. The committee can, and in fact, if we had the submissions of the public hearing, perhaps we could look at that, because they did come and made certain written submissions on the bill.
Chair,
I think the DG is absolutely correct. 5A and B do need to be kept separate because they refer to different kinds of benefits. As regards the Honourable Groenewald's suggestion that we get an expert, I do support that, and cognizant, I mean, given that the Director General's comments, I'm now even more interested to hear the expert.
Right.
Yeah, no, just a suggestion. I think on the B, that it is specifically referring to military veterans. I think it must include the dependents. I think it must. That one who saw his mother being kicked by the police might have a problem needing dedicated camp.
Honorable, you remember we are saying that the department is going to categorize these benefits. I'm sure that there's no need for us to go to the. We're just giving an example. Then can we leave it at that? We'll have an expert and then come when we do the final version of the bill. Can we go to 8? Honorable Daniel?
Section 2. Roman figure 2. It says that the minister may, in consultation with the Minister of Finance, from France appropriated by Parliament, propose this blah, 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 blah.
From France?
Finance. France.
Seeing that the minister is not an accounting officer, I therefore suggest that the DG may, from funds appropriated by Parliament for the purpose, transfer funds to organs of state or other institutions that pay or provide benefits to military veterans as an accounting officer.
That's another suggestion, the accounting officer to transfer funds. It would seem we are agreed on that. Honorable Amania.
Yeah, I'd
like to hear the DG on this, because essentially then we're saying that, if I'm correct, the DG, in consultation with the Minister of Finance, I would like to hear the DG on this. I would be very surprised in terms of cabinet protocol if the DG breathes into the Minister of Finance's office
and agrees without the minister knowing to transfer funds. I would suggest that is what is described as a career limiting.
Chairperson, sorry, I want to apologize. I only received a call which I had to go. We deliberated. I know it's a very important phase now, but I'm satisfied on the deliberations we already had, and I think we had an agreement on that. But if you will excuse me, I have to apologize now.
Thank you very much for the contribution.
I'm not sure whether we were able to capture what Honorable Daniel was suggesting properly, because when I was listening, he was not saying that the Director General is in consultation. He was saying the Director General may, from funds appropriated by Parliament for the purpose, transfer funds to organs of state or other institutions that pay or provide benefits to military veterans. That is the amendment he's proposing.
So there is no question of consultation.
No.
Subsection 2A, that was for the belief of the minister. Now, for the sensing of funds, because the command is of the thing.
Yeah. Are we agreed, Honorable Menia?
Chair, again, I think we should be a little bit careful here, and I would like to hear the department, and I'd also like to see, when it comes to the transfer of funds, what the PFMA prescribes. We don't want to be in conflict.
You have already answered that. Yeah.
Now, Chair, the proposal is out because it is the DA with the accounting office. So having the initial entry point of the minister with the executive authority, then the DG has to then proceed with that. In fact, part of all of that is extensively dealt with in the original draft under the section on certain powers and functions of the department, which places that responsibility.
Right. That is basically the route that we will take. Maria, Honorable?
Yeah, Chairperson, then in the same content, can we then remove three?
Three what?
For the purpose of paragraph 1 and 2, the minister may, after consultation, can we remove that?
Obviously, if we agree on the first one, everything that follows or emanates from the first one, the department should work on that one. I think that is what the ordinary must do. It is what affects other clauses. Can we go to 9? We are starting to do that on time. We'll go to 9. Agreed. Oh, online, Honorable Nadel.
Thank you, Secretary.
That one up.
Thank you, Secretary. On page 9. The paragraph, the subcontent says certain powers and duties of department. I would like us to rephrase it as powers and duties of department, not certain powers.
Certain powers and duties. of the department to be powers and duties of the department. Right? Sure. Agreed? We were on 10, or maybe to 11. All good.
The title to say if we accept it as power, then there should be a consequential amendment with the long title. Because when we were dealing with a long title, the certain was not omitted. So then we that means we need to omit it as well from the long title.
If we agree to delete certain in the title, and if indeed, as the department suggests, we delete certain in the long title, we have already debated this and agreed that it would not be a good idea to delete certain because the bill does not cater for all the powers and functions of, or does not provide for all the powers and functions of the department.
I think that was the debate when we started. Thank you very much. So we retain it and go to Honorable
Again, Chair, I just wanted to say from the leader, if the last statement in the powers and the duties of department, what does it mean? Is it restrictive? Does it limit the department? What does it do?
You want to answer?
I think it indicates that there may be other functions also, which is in fact
I think that was explained very well earlier on. Can we go to Honorable Dian?
Hirak of Nim. The Director General must, as soon as possible, after the commencement of the Act, and in consultation with the Minister, file a priority list of needs of investment in relation to that. This, I think, should be taken out because it's already in the Act. Page 8, 6, 1, plus 1, plus 6, 1.
Yes.
Oh,
I'd like some clarity. What is the Honourable Diade proposing exactly? Is he proposing that we delete clause 6, 1 and 2?
Yes, that is what he is proposing.
And on what grounds is he doing so?
Honourable Diade?
Yeah, this
has
already been sitting in the Act.
Where?
The fact to function in the sense of mentioning that. And because it also refers to the advisory council.
What are honorable members saying? I need to get to it. What was he trying to say here?
Those priorities, and you may get into a problem once you do that. somebody may be in need of a house as an immediate thing. They don't need access to health care. They are fit and healthy. They don't need access to health care, but they need a shelter. Or they need a job. And because if they have a job, they can be able to alleviate their situation of needing shelter or of education, training, and skills development, which we can then facilitate.
Can live with that. We were on page 12. You just took us back. You took us back from page 12, that is here. Honorable Minister.
Thank you for that explanation. Clause 7 deals with the certain powers and duties of the department, and it's clause 7 stretches 7, page 7, 10, from page 9 through to page 12. Just on my point about the department having an obligation to table an annual report in Parliament, I just want to be clear, where is that obligation in the Act?
The department should table the annual report to Parliament.
I'll explain. Chair, I wasn't very clear. We agree that the department should table an annual report in Parliament. That obligation should be set out in legislation. I'm just not sure in the bill where that obligation is set out. If it is in the bill, I'm satisfied. If it's not, we need to find a place to insert it. That's all. Sorry, I was not clear.
It is not expressly indicated in any part of the bill, but there is in existence already statutory obligation that is imposed on every Department of State to table its annual report and financial statements, the Public Service Act, the Public Finance Management Act, and the regulations to both are there. Here, the issue of the annual report was in the context not of the department per se, but those institutions that the bill establishes, which is your advisory council, your appeal board, your National Ministry of Veterans Association, and so on. And in that context,
my understanding that it is provided for in other acts. Honorable, we are not going to finish this today because already 1 o'clock we'll have to reschedule our meeting. Honorable Daniel?
Just on those certain powers and duties of the department.
Where are you now?
On page 9. Without derogating from its general powers and duties, then the National Department of State that A must provide the required administration services and infrastructure to the advisory council and appeal board. What about other institutions or similar that have similar status here? Because we have an umbrella body that we are regulating here. How is the department going to be supporting it? I think we should insert that into any other structure or institution of similar status that will talk to your umbrella.
That's a suggestion. Any other institution of similar nature. Another one,
I would need some time to consider it, but I would be very wary of placing a general omnibus obligation on the department because the clause says must provide the required administrative assistance. careful that we don't frame that clause too widely and overburden the department.
Yeah? You agree?
We need to go back to that. Let's park it. That must be it's of concern.
Okay. Can we then go to...
We have been moving back and forth. Can we, which means that we were at stage 5. Honorable Market?
Yeah, just maybe to find out on procedure. What does the parking mean? If we say we are parking it, what does that mean? It means we are going to come back and discuss it as we are discussing now. Or if we park it, we say it is for the department to see how they work it out. Or
we must have.
And I'll suggest that if we page through, we might stop here because it's 1 o'clock and we might find that we have already finished. Thank you.
No, it's not 1 o'clock. Right. What do we. Maybe, Honorable Marquis, right? We may stop here.
Mm-hmm. I was saying we don't stop. Because we don't know the remaining pages, maybe we don't have any.
Oh.
But what does the parking mean?
Perfect. No, but you need to, there is a suggestion. You need to, something must be done. You can't just park it, it's true. Do we say to the department, work it out, think it over, and then when you come back, we'll discuss it, or what do we say? Honorable Mazia.
Both the department and the department, why are we catching our mind?
Hello, yes. You want an explanation?
Mm. I mean, we can't park
a container next to your house. Can you explain that?
Did you offer an explanation?
No. Are we parking a buggy on a Ferrari? That was it. I'm just going to note I just need to get a reiteration of that which say we should park or relook at. Because there are many mines.
Chairperson, what we expect is that, like, for instance, in the legal language, it's not always that you find an expression of must being used. A must and shall is instructive in the legal word. Now, how the department then would have to assist us is when we come back. Because there is an argument around the must be used to tell us if they are comfortable or if the law allows, or alternatively, can we use another system? Because it is not our matter alone, it is our matter and both the matter of the legal team. Every matter that we put on the site, it's a matter that we are unable to resolve. Therefore, we need additional brains to assist us to unlock. So they must provide leadership when we come back. Well, if they can't, then we will use our prerogative.
We are saying that the department and the legal team must look at the terminology and the appropriateness of the terminology. Isn't that what we are saying? Did you?
Chair, let's not park. Let's drive on. We can when we leave with
for this in the state of mind. With respect to each one of them, one of the four months, they're providing support to the advisory council and the appeal board. That is an obligation that we have anyway. It's an institution of the minister, department, and all investigating any matters, submission, inquiry, complaint, even matters from themselves. We have that obligation. We are already doing that. Reports, providing the reports and so on, and then developing strategies and programs. Some of those things are already adopted.
We
can live
with it. Can only hold it. Can you go to page 12? We must be moving.
I'm not going there.
You are seeing the book now. Page 12?
Appreciation now.
Mr. Smith?
Thank you, Chair. In the proposed amendment regarding Clause 8, 8.2 reads the DG must, in conjunction with South African Military Veterans Association and other military veterans organizations, create mechanisms, etc. Now, it says the DG must, in conjunction with the association, but at that stage, it seems to me the association hasn't been established as yet, because Clause 1 creates the abstract body. Clause 1 says it's hereby established an association, but there's not yet people in that association. And then point 2, it seems to me impossible to work with an association where there's not yet persons in the association. So I would suggest that the committee considers must in conjunction with you also omit the words association and other. In other words, so that to read that the Director General must in conjunction with military veteran organizations create mechanisms.
That suggestion will then have effect on subsection 3, because subsection 3 refers to the association and A, B, C up to D, saying what the association does. Maybe the department will have to relook at the restructuring subsection 2 in the light of the information that the association is an abstract thing, that in such a way that it will cover the abstractness of that structure rather than to the way we're going to deal with it. And that would mean also 3 months ago if we accepted the amendment by the chief.
Thank you very much. Okay, we'll leave it for the department and legal advisors. No, we don't talk. 13. Honorable Mayor.
Chair, you'll recall that in one of my original amendments,
You are at 13.
I proposed on page 13 that the section which reads provided such organizations as recognized by the minister, etc., etc., I propose that be deleted. So I wonder if you would note my objection. I don't think that the legislation should limit who the minister chooses to associate with. The minister will decide which organizations and which individuals he or she chooses to meet from time to time.
So we recorded the objection. Honorable Daniel. You can switch that one off.
functions of the association. I think with 9A, perform the functions provided in this act. Advise the minister on such matters relating to legislation and policy affecting military veterans. I am of the opinion that we delete that. Because the functions already, the advisory board, will also be doing that. Instead, rather, this association provides support to the department in the implementation of the National Military Veterans Program.
That's a suggested amendment on the association. Honorable Mayor, switch that one off, Honorable Mayor.
Chair, I don't know where all these new amendments are coming from. I mean, if they're codified in the document, it would be very interesting to get hold of or to have a copy of the document. But it seems to me that the association should not be an extension of the executive branch of government. The association should advise the minister, would from time to time advise the director general.
What? In the original bill, chair, it's already they all have said 9(1)A and B. It's a duplication. As far as I'm concerned, it's a duplication. All I am saying, to delete A and B, we can add to provide support in the department, making sure. Because anyway, that umbrella body is there to make sure that things happen.
Yeah.
It will support the department in its endeavor that it's making, in making sure of that progress that sees the light of the day. Because it is there as an umbrella body by member association will be part of that. Thank you.
Thank you. General,
to remind the honorable members that you recall that we said in terms of the advisory council, half or three it will be military veterans. We spoke about 10, I think there was a suggestion of. I'm saying if military veterans also they will be in the advisory, then I'm inclined to agree with the Honorable Daniel, because then they will be sitting in the advisory, a council advisory to the minister, as suggested here. So it seems to be a repetition.
Duplication.
In other words, a duplication.
Veterans, they are represented, and they serve on that particular advisory. I don't know.
Okay, thank you.
Mayor? Honorable? Chair, I think we need to be very careful here. My understanding is that the umbrella body, in terms of this legislation, would have option from time to time to advise the minister, presumably on the interests of military veterans in their organizations or associations. That is quite different from the advisory council. The advisory council could advise the minister on a range of functions. Also, only three members of the advisory councils will be military from the military veterans umbrella body, and they will not necessarily represent all military veterans associations. That's the first point. The second point is there seems to be a confusion of functions. The Honorable Daniels is quite wrong. The military veterans association umbrella body are there, in my view, to advise the minister and the director general on the interests of their organization. They are the body that must make sure that things get done, to use your words, is the department.
Our understanding as a department is that an umbrella association of military, which brings together organizations of military veterans, would have a responsibility to support the department in reaching out and ensuring that the National Program for Military Veterans does indeed reach military veterans even at the back of the beyond in the country. And from simply because it is an umbrella association of military veterans organizations. And it is in that context that we believe that the department would benefit from support from an umbrella organization, obviously working through its member organizations. And to that extent, I think we would want to agree with the honorable member here that perhaps portfolio committee should consider legislating in that effect and making certain that we are able to use that structure that way.
Honorable Minister, we are going to...
Chair, there's a problem of process here. I need to be clear. Is the department proposing these amendments, or is the ANC proposing these amendments? And whoever is proposing these amendments should propose them on, I'd like to see them on, in writing.
That's right.
I wonder what the issue would be here. I mean, let's discuss what is on the table, not as long as it's justified to be discussed. Whoever, I was under the impression that the department is here to help us if we don't understand some of these things, because we keep on asking them, how do they see this thing? Is it workable? So we go to the department. If not the department, we go to the legal people. And I don't think that is an issue. As long as this thing is on the table, let's deal with what is on the table, not with people. Thank you.
Now, Honorable Dennis.
Chair, maybe I should make it clear to the member, Honorable Member Manier, that I represent. I'm a public servant. I represent a constituency. And that includes that of military veterans. And if they say, these are the things that we would like you to talk to, those are the things that I would talk to, and the ANC for that matter, or as the ANC. Chair, the department may be there and make it sure that things happen, but the department will not be able to do anything without it being supported by military veterans. If the military veterans don't avail themselves, if that umbrella body does it make it possible for the department to reach military veterans, how is the department going to reach them? Because remember, the responsibilities of the department are such that it must talk to umbrella body, it must talk to organizations, it must talk to even individual military veterans. Because remember, we've been saying, every citizen in this country is freedom of association. No one is compelled to join, having been or to continue to join. The department can take care of an individual military veteran and an umbrella body and military veteran organization. So, in all of that, how fast track should be the department? Therefore, the department does need military veterans to support the department, to fulfill its mandate. That is one check. Secondly, check. A suggestion has been made on page 14 that the minister must appoint not fewer than 10 and not more than 15, because the 15 came up. And following that one, it says at least half of that number must be military veterans. And in terms of the nomination, the nominations again, that speaks to nomination. That speaks to appointment. Meaning, military veterans that will be nominated and appointed will not only come from the umbrella body. Because again, military veterans are individuals, groups, organizations, others will be subscribing to an umbrella body. Thank you, Chair.
I'm hearing two things here, the function of associations. That one, that the association must support the department. Is that not what we are saying? Two, when it came, it seemed there is something that we must hit here. And then I want to know which is the one that you want to be deleted. Because here they say they must perform the function provided for in this act. I take that to be the support that they give.
Chair, 91A and B, the advisory board already will be given. What are the functions of the umbrella body? It's to make sure that member associations that subscribe to the umbrella body are in good standing, that they reach information, that they make sure that whatever the department is dishing back gets to them.
How do we put it here in the act?
As I said, we delete A and B. We say the umbrella board must support the department in terms of the work that the department is doing.
Honorable, what? Because one, we must stop.
Chair, I was about to propose, it is now past one and I regret I have to go. I would propose that we close proceedings, that we schedule 2 days next week on which to deliberate on this bill, and that the Honourable Daniels submit her amendments in writing so that all members of the committee can see those amendments.
What is our time? We do have. Okay. That's the suggestion. Can we? This time we can park. Okay.
Well, I agree that we park this time. But I don't think Honorable Daniels has got any obligation to write anything. Because she will be here. She can just say what she wants. She doesn't have any obligation to come up with a written. That is the only thing I don't agree with. She will be here, she can talk for herself.
Is it a matter of procedure?
No. She's not a public representative. Not a public hearing for her.
Look, we will schedule 2 days next week and then to finish discussing this bill. I understand we are still within target. I've realized the more members become familiar with the bill, the more they want the bill to be a perfect piece of legislation. You shouldn't be worried about the debate that is going on. It's enriching this bill at the end of the day. Shows that members are now acquainted with the bill. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Before I adjourn,